Well, y'all, when we came to Rouse's Point 15 years ago, Ashley was 8 months pregnant with our oldest daughter. We have three daughters. And so you guys have seen this happen, but my girls are getting older. My daughters are growing up. And in some ways, man, that's such a sweet situation as they're becoming more and more independent. But if I'm honest, as they get older and more independent, there's a part of me that just misses those early phases where they're so dependent and so needy. You know what I'm talking about? Like those preschool and toddler phases. You kind of miss those days when they needed you for everything. I mean, everything, like buckling up and getting in the bed and tying their shoes. And they don't need me for any of those things anymore, right? Which is probably a good thing. But you find yourself missing those days when they were so much more dependent. You miss those preschool spaces, those times where they thought they could do everything, but the truth was they couldn't really do hardly anything all by myself, like they would say to us. And the reality is that all of us are a little bit like preschoolers, if you think about it. Preschoolers aren't that different from the rest of us because we all love to be self-sufficient. We all love to be capable and able. We don't, any of us want to have need or especially don't want to be needy. The reality is we kind of all walk through life with this, I've got this mentality. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I've got this. Maybe it's trouble in the finances. I've got this. Maybe it's trouble in the relationships. I've got this. Maybe you're experiencing troubles with health and wellness. And even in that, you're saying, I've got this, while all at the same time, you're beginning to realize, you know what? I don't. This is beyond my control. And the reality is that independence can be a good thing. Don't hear me wrong. I like that my kids are becoming independent. That is the goal, right? Independence can be a good thing, but it can simultaneously also be a bad thing. Because sometimes we can just be too big to know our need. And not just too big, sometimes we can be too smart, sometimes we can be too affluent, too strong, too stubborn, too proud, too confident to know our own need. But how is it that this I've got this mentality is actually a bad thing? Well, to illustrate that, I want to quote to you a famous preacher from the 1800s. His name was Charles Spurgeon, and he's referred to as the Prince of Preachers. And this is what Spurgeon had to say. He said, it's not our littleness that hinders Christ, but our bigness. It's not our weakness that hinders Christ, but our strength. It's not our darkness that hinders Christ. It is our supposed light that holds back his hand. And I don't know about you, but for me, I don't want to hinder the work of Christ in and around me. And I don't want my life to hold back his hand. And the reality is Jesus actually said something quite similar to what Charles Spurgeon said here. Jesus' words are found in the Beatitudes, or his famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. I want you to just look at the screen for this one. It comes out of Matthew 5:3. And in this famous sermon, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gave these different statements of what it is to be blessed. And he said this, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. When do we ever think of poverty as a blessing? But Jesus said, those who are poor in spirit are the ones who are blessed. So how, realistically, how do people like you and people like me, people who love to be big enough, people who love to be smart enough, strong enough, self-sufficient enough, how do people like us keep from hindering Jesus' work? How do we keep from holding back his hand in our lives as he looks to work in and through us? How do we keep from missing the blessing of being poor in spirit? I'll show you how this morning from a great example in John 9. If you would turn with me in your Bibles to John chapter 9 as we continue our journey with Jesus through the Gospel of John, and we will see there how we can do this, what this looks like. As you turn in your Bibles to John, it's in the New Testament, it's in the Gospels. That word gospel means good news. You have the good news of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and then John. And we're walking as a church and in our small groups through the Gospel of John this year. John chapter 9. If you don't have a Bible this morning, I'll put the words up on the screen. You can follow along there. You can use the BPF app. And if you would like a free copy of the Bible, go by our Welcome Center this morning and grab one before you go. We would love to send you home with your own copy of God's Word. So before we jump into John 9, and we are going to cover the whole chapter this morning, so I'm going to move through some things pretty quickly as we take on this whole chapter, but it really is one thought unit. And what this whole chapter puts in front of us is this compelling story that is a clear contrast of two different kinds of people. On the one hand, you have this one person who is desperately aware of his own need. Unlike a preschooler, right? Like, this guy is clearly aware of what he needs and the help that he needs. And he's contrasted with this very proud group of people that desperately need to understand how badly they're hindering Jesus' work and holding back the hand of God in their life. And you'll see this come alive as we walk through John 9. Let's begin with verse 1, John 9, 1. As Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," Jesus said, "but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in his life." And this morning, as we look at these verses, I want you to pay attention to the details, all right? So picture this scene. Jesus and his disciples are on the go, as they often were doing. And as they went, they ministered and they served as they were called to do. And as they're on the go, they encountered this man who was born blind. This man born blind becomes really the central figure of this story today. And what you see here, as they come to minister to this man, that Jesus' disciples are filled with assumptions and questions. You'll hear them ask a question, but I want you to look for their assumption that's behind the question that they asked Jesus. This is what they asked: is his blindness a result of his sin or his parents' sin? The assumption is that this is the consequence of someone's sin, right? That's the assumption, that this suffering is the result of sin. So whose is it? Is it his own or is it his parents'? And what we find in this is that Jesus' answer to their question, how Jesus confronts their assumptions, is so powerful and so comforting for us. Don't miss it. Is this blindness a result of his sin or his parents' sin? And Jesus says, neither. Your assumptions are false. It's neither his sin nor his parents' sin. And this morning, I want you to listen to Jesus. I want you to lean in, get close, and listen to Jesus. What he's telling us in this is that suffering isn't always the result of sin. And friends, I hope that challenges your assumptions. Suffering isn't always the result of sin. Now, let's deal with this in reality, right? Sometimes suffering can be the result of sin. Sometimes you and I do bad things, and those bad things create natural consequences that are bad. And our bad does cause us to experience bad. Sometimes that does happen. But what is clear from Jesus' words is that's not always the case. Not all suffering is the result of specific sin. Now, in a general sense, all suffering is the result of sin, in that we live in a broken and fallen world. And because the world is broken, because sin was introduced into the world, that's why we experience all of these kinds of suffering in a general sense. But not all specific suffering is the result of our specific sin. Does that make sense? The reality is that you can do good and still get bad. Okay? And so the idea of do good, do bad, get bad, that's a lie. It's a lie that I hope that the followers of Jesus don't believe. Because this idea of do good, do bad, get bad, this lie is a legalistic and twisted view of God and the world and how God works in the world. And what Jesus is doing in this space in John 9 is he's correcting these false assumptions that the disciples held. And this morning, I hope and pray that he's correcting your false assumptions and my false assumptions as well. And the reason why I pray that that's the case is because it's so important that Jesus' words here shape the way that we understand this subject, the way that we understand suffering and pain and struggle, because it will determine how you and I, as followers of Jesus, face struggle and suffering and pain. This will shape the way we walk through it when we inevitably walk through it. In fact, I want us to go back to verse 3 and deeply consider for more full understanding the words of Jesus. He says, neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus, but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in him. But why? Because, but that the work of God might be displayed in him. And again, I want you to lean in. I want you to get close and listen to Jesus. Listen, pain can have purpose, deep and meaningful purpose. And I want you to hear this morning because I know so many of you bring with you so much pain, so much suffering, so much struggle. God is not absent in pain and suffering. No, those are the spaces where he is sometimes the most present. Those are the spaces where he is working. It's not there because God is not working. It's that God is working in those spaces in unique ways. Pain and suffering create unique space for God to do some of his best work. And he's working in a million different ways in that and through that and around that. He's working in ways that are seen, and he's working in ways that are unseen. God is so present in our pain and suffering, so much near to that, that Jesus described it as a blessing. And that sounds crazy, right? Who in the world would say, my pain and my suffering is a blessing? Jesus is the one who would say that. But that sounds crazy to us. That sounds crazy to the world. But you know what? I actually believe it. I believe it because I've seen it. I've seen it over and over and over again in your lives. As we do this thing called church together, I've seen you walk through struggle. I've seen you walk through hardships. I've seen you remain faithful to the one who is always faithful. I've seen you worship through the storm. I've seen you ask the questions, have the assumptions challenged. I've seen you as God moves through you, and it's been a testimony to me that pain does have purpose. I've seen it enough that I actually believe it. I believe it. And in John 9, this man that was born blind, he was no stranger to suffering, right? Because he had only ever known the suffering of not being able to see. He had only ever known the pain of living in complete darkness. And the work of God was about to be displayed powerfully in him. That's where we keep reading in verse 4. Jesus said, as long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. After saying this, he spit on the ground. You heard that right. He spit on the ground. He made some mud with the saliva, and he put it onto the man's eyes. Go, he told him, wash in the pool of Siloam. This word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. So Jesus, in a very unusual way, by spitting on the ground and making mud, we have no idea why, in a very unusual way, Jesus demonstrated here that he has the power to remove darkness and to give, literally give, light and life. He used dirt and spit and a pool and a bit of this man's faith to heal the man of physical blindness. Jesus said to the man, go, and the man went in obedience. And ultimately, he went home that day with sight in his eyes. The power of God on display in his pain. Now, before we continue on with the story, I actually want to stop here for just a moment and challenge some more of our assumptions and some more of our questions about the role of pain and suffering in our lives. Because you look at a story like this in John 9, and you see God do the miraculous. You see God bring about miraculous healing. And it causes us to ask questions. It causes our assumptions to be challenged. Because we see this happen. We see the demonstration of God's power. And if we're honest, we ask, right? Let's be honest with each other this morning about the things that we ask when we see these things. We ask questions like, why wasn't my loved one healed? Right? Like, why haven't I been healed? Why haven't I been delivered? Why haven't I been healed of my literal blindness, of this disease that I'm facing? Why haven't I been delivered out of the poverty that I'm experiencing? Why have I not been moved beyond the heartache and the struggle and the difficulty that I'm facing? Why, God? Why? I mean, God, my suffering, this specific suffering, it's not the result of some specific sin. I didn't do anything to get this diagnosis. So why? And why, God? We had faith. God, we've prayed. God, we've asked. God, we've obeyed. Why? What's the point? What's the purpose? Why? 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 Like, if we're honest, that's what we ask, isn't it? It's what I ask. And I want you to be reminded this morning of the truth that it's not do good, get good. It's not do bad, get bad. No, truthfully, sometimes do bad, get good happens. And we see it and we struggle with it, don't we? And sometimes do good, get bad happens, and we live it and we struggle with it. But I want you to also understand another reality this morning that I saw this week as I was preparing, and I feel like God generously shared with me, and I want to graciously, generously share it with you. Follow with me. Here's the reality. In John 9, this healed man that was born blind, that God demonstrated powerfully a miraculous change in his life, this healed man born blind ultimately still died. At some point, he physically died, and his life on earth ended, right? I mean, if he was still alive, I feel like we would know about him. He is dead. And yet, God's power was still demonstrated miraculously in him. I mean, we're talking about it 2,000 years later. But he still did die. So what's my point? When I ask God this week why, the questions of why, I mean, this may sound silly to you, but God's gentle revelation to me this week was this reality that that man still experienced physical death. See, as I was preparing and I was asking God why last year two of my loved ones died? Why last year two of my loved ones suffered? Why two people that I love deeply were not healed, even though we prayed for healing? Why ultimately did they not physically survive their suffering? Why, in spite of our faithful praying and our begging out to God, why, in spite of who they were, why did they not get that miracle? And what God gently reminded me this week is this, that pain has purpose, that physical death is not final. And that my loved ones, that their lives and that their deaths even demonstrated the miraculous work of God of grace because they had seen their need and they had accepted fully Jesus. And maybe in your grief this morning, you need that gentle reminder too. And I saw that so powerfully this morning. Yesterday, I stood here and led a family in this church through a funeral. And they sat right there. And then this morning, they were right there again. Because we walk through this together. And maybe you need the same gentle reminder that God generously gave me this week. So what happens in our story is that the light of the world brought this man, literally brought this man out of darkness. And then he sent him home seeing. And his neighbors that had known him from childhood, his neighbors who had watched him grow up, his neighbors that knew that this was the blind beggar, asked how. How is this possible? They want to know how, and they want to know who. They are so curious about this, as you would be. And so in order to get more perspective and more understanding, they take this man to a group that they believed should help them. It's the Pharisees, right? This Pharisees, this group, they were the religious establishment. They were leaders. And they're the ones that we know from going through 9 chapters of John, they're the ones that we know are antagonistic towards Jesus, and he's always butting up against this group called the Pharisees. And in part of the reason why Jesus and this group are butting heads is because he's constantly speaking judgment over them for their self-sufficient, self-righteous hypocrisy, right? Well, this is the group that the neighbors brought the man to. And what you see next in John 9, what follows here is 3 different interrogations. Not once, not twice, but 3 times the blind man is being challenged. He's being asked and interrogated about his experience and why and how and who. In fact, one point they even bring his parents into this to try to figure this out. And what you see in each of these interrogations in their own unique way, each of them is trying to discredit, disprove, and degenerate Jesus and his work of the miracle and the healing. Now, for the sake of time this morning, I'm going to skip over 20 verses that include the lessons, the words of these 3 interrogations. Those verses will be covered specifically in small group, though, this week. So you'll want to experience that as you study John with your small group. But suffice it to say this, that in each of these interrogations, each time this man was confronted, his testimony in regards to their questions was consistent. He just kept saying the same thing. I absolutely know who did this. I know who it was. It was Jesus. I don't know a lot about him, but I know this. He must be from God. I'm not exactly sure how he did this, but I know he did do it. And this man's experience can really best be summarized with one key verse in that section. Verse 25, I want you to look at it because it's so powerful. This man said this, "One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see." I was blind, but now I see. I needed sight, and he gave it to me. And ultimately, the Pharisees dismissed Jesus, and they dismissed this blind man, and they called them both liars, they called them both sinners, and then they threw this man out of their synagogue, which was a Jewish place of worship. And right after he's thrown out of the synagogue, that's where we pick back up in verse 35, and it says, Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, and when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" "Who is he, sir?" the man asked. "Tell me so that I can believe in him." And Jesus said, catch this, "You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking to you." And then the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. You see, the Pharisees threw him out and Jesus brought him in because that's what Jesus does. Jesus brings people in and the light of the world shows them light and life. And he brings them in and he says, "In me, you will find all that you need. In me, you will have all that you need to experience this world. You'll have all that you need to persevere and to be delivered out of the suffering. You will have all that you need in me to be delivered into eternity where there is no pain, there is no suffering, and there are no tears. You come to me and I will make you able to see spiritually for eternity." Jesus told him, "You have seen with your own eyes. You have seen the Son of Man. It is me." And the man believed, "That you may believe." And he didn't just believe, he worshiped, right? He may have been kicked out of the Jewish synagogue, the Jewish house of worship, but he turned right where he was into a place of worship. And he worshiped for what he had experienced, and he worshiped for who he was in the presence of because he believed in Jesus. That you may believe, that you and I may believe, that we may believe and that we may follow and that we may worship Christ as King. See, that's the purpose. That's the purpose, that at our point of personal darkness, at our point of personal weakness, that in our littleness, we discover God. That it's in those spaces that we experience the worst of what this world has, we discover the greatest of the goodness of God. In our need, we discover his nearness in unique ways. In our need, we discover his presence and his power. And that ultimately, we look at all of that and we go, it's worth it. He is worth it. Discovering Jesus is always worth it. And when we understand, when we truly understand and experience the power and the purpose of pain and suffering, when we really know and understand God's presence in it, it does. It turns the world and our perspective on its head. And we no longer are the kind of people that pity the poor and powerless. Instead, we become the kind of people that would pity the well and the wealthy. Because they don't know and they haven't seen and they haven't experienced and they need to know because of their earthly position. They don't know their need, but they so deeply need to know what we know. Right? And it sounds crazy, but it's so critical that each of us ultimately come to the end of ourselves and in that space that we become so deeply acquainted with our own need for Christ. And ultimately, we feel sorry for those who don't know. We have empathy for those who feel self-sufficient and self-righteous, good and good enough. See, the man born blind, he knew his darkness. He knew his weakness. He knew his own littleness, and he experienced Jesus in life-changing ways. But the self-sufficient, self-righteous Pharisees, they did not. And that's the point of this passage. And Jesus brings it all to this point in John 9:39. He said this, "For judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see and those who see will become blind. You see how Jesus turns everything on its head? I have come that the blind will see and those who see will become blind. What he's saying there is those who know their need will find Jesus, and those who do not know their need won't. And so where are you in that? Where are you? Do you know your need? Do you embrace your need? Do you run into your need? Or in pride and self-centeredness, do you run away? Because those who don't know their need won't find Jesus. And ultimately, those who don't know their need, those who don't know Jesus, y'all, those are the ones that we should weep over. Those are the ones that we should relentlessly pray for. Those are the ones that we should so passionately and generously share the good news of Christ with. The Pharisees who were so blinded by their own strength, by their own bigness, by their own goodness, their ability to behave and to keep the law, not just the laws of God, but also the laws of man, they did not know their need because they thought in and of themselves that they were good enough and strong enough. They were so blinded that they could not recognize God. They were so blinded by themselves that they pushed away the hand of God. They hindered the work of Christ. They were so blinded that they did not recognize the one that God promised, the one that God sent, the one that they anticipated, the one that they hoped for. Their view of themselves obstructed their view of Jesus. They were too big, too powerful, too strong in position, and so opposite of the poor in spirit that they missed God. They held back his hand. And they hindered his work. And the call of John 9 is, don't be like them. The call on our lives from John 9 is instead to have the humility of the man born blind. He saw his need, and he saw Jesus. And the Pharisees saw neither. And so for you and me, man, like, let's not hinder the work of Jesus in us and through us. No, let's know our need. Let's embrace our need. Let's accept our neediness. And let's confess our need for Christ. Anywhere, everywhere, all the time, every opportunity, let's boast in our weaknesses so that we can talk about the strength of Christ. Don't hinder Jesus' work in you and through you with self-righteous pride, but instead in humility, like, accept your need. Know your need, and in your neediness, talk about the work of Christ. Be like this man and declare, I don't know everything, but I know this. I once was blind, but now I see. I once was spiritually blind, but he has given me spiritual life. I once was dead, but he has brought me alive, and I know and believe that I will have life eternal because of him. And the reality is, you and I don't do this easily, right? We don't get this easily, but it is so incredible. It is so critical that each one of us personally accept and embrace our own darkness, that each one of us accept and embrace our own littleness and our own individual weakness, and that we meet Jesus in those spaces. And it's not just you and I. Like, it's every Christ follower who has ever lived, including a man named Paul, the Apostle Paul, a very powerful figure in the New Testament of the Bible. You need to understand who he was to understand what this means. Paul was a man that was a terrorist. He was terrorizing the early church, and he was persecuting Jesus' followers. And by grace, God transformed and changed him from a terrorist to a compassionate church-planting missionary, ultimately a person that wrote a significant portion of the New Testament of the Bible. And I want you to hear this morning something that the Apostle Paul said in his own experience in discovering Jesus, in his own weakness. These were the words that he wrote to the church, to you and to me and to us today, 2 Corinthians 12, 9 and 10. But Jesus said to me, Jesus said to the Apostle Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. Even you, the one who was terrorizing and killing my church, my grace is sufficient for you. For my power is made perfect in weakness. And Paul said, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight. I find joy. I delight in my weaknesses. I delight in my insults. I delight in hardships and persecutions and difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. See, where I am weak in me, I find strength in him. And ultimately, my I've got this is transformed into he's got me. Live or die, he's got me. And so this morning, I want to ask, does this I've got this mentality to describe the way that you walked in today? Or have you come to the end of yourself and accepted your weakness, your littleness, and ultimately your own darkness? Because when you get there to the end of yourself, whether it's pain or suffering or some other form of humility that brings you there, when you get there, you are in the perfect position to cry out like the Apostle Paul, oh, his grace is sufficient for me. When you get there, you experience and receive the blessing that the man born blind experienced, and you react the way he reacts as you worship and as you sing and as you declare, amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first